This week's Pasha is Pasha Tzav, and we'll start tonight, not at the beginning, but on page 574. Pasuk Yud Aleph, the beginning of the paragraph. V'zayis Torah Sevach Hashlamim. This is the law of the Shlamim offering. Asher Yakriv LaHashem, that a person shall offer to Hashem. Im Al Toida Yakrivenu. If he is offering it as a Toida, as a Thanksgiving offering, and then the Torah tells us what he has to do. So let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi, Pasuk Yud Beis, three lines from the bottom of the right column in Rashi. Im al teida yakrivenu, if he offers this peace offering as a thanksgiving offering. Im al devar hayda al nation asalei. If for the purpose of giving thanks for a miracle that occurred for a person, or it means here a salvation that occurred for a person. Kigon yardei hayam, for instance, people who travel by sea. V'holchei midbarius, or they've traveled through deserts. V'chavushei beis ha'asurim, or they've been jailed. V'chayesh in Esrape, or someone that is ill that became well, shem tzricha l'haydeis, that they need to give thanks, shekasu v'hen yoydu l'ashem chastei, that regarding them, and tell them it's written, yoydu l'ashem chastei, they shall give thanks to Hashem for his kindness, v'nif lo'aysim l'vei adam, and they will tell his wonders to people, v'yiz v'chuziv chaytayt, and they shall offer offerings of thanksgiving. V'al achas me'ela nada shlamim halalu, if it's for any of these things that the person now vowed to bring a shlamim, shamei teidahein, they are called peace offerings of teida, utuunei slacham or beinyan, and they need all the different types of breads that have to be brought to the Torah relates in this parsha. Ve'enei nechalin eliyem v'layla, and they're only eaten for one day and night, k'mosh beforesh kan, as the Torah here explicitly states. Meaning, there are differences between a shlamim carbon that's a taida and one that's just a regular shlamim carbon. And as Rashi tells us, the person bringing a taida is bringing a taida for what the Gemara and Brachas tells us are four situations. And if a person survives those situations, a person has to give thanks. And it's based on a pasuk in Tehillim that talks about giving thanks for Hashem's wonders and salvation and bringing offerings of thanksgiving for that. And that is what you're bringing a carbon taida for these four things that Rashi mentions, that are mentioned in Tehillim, which is actually a Gemara in Brachas. You bring a carbon taida for traveling through the ocean, making it through a desert, getting out of jail, and being healed from a sickness. Now, these things that Rashi's mentioning are actually, like I say, it's Gemara in Brachas. And the Gemara in Brachas is not talking about a carbon taida. It's not talking about a Thanksgiving offering. It's talking about what we call Berchas HaGomel, or as we say, Benching Gomel. A person who has survived certain dangerous situations has an obligation to give thanks to Hashem, making a special bracha. That's called Berchas HaGomel. We call that Benching Gomel. And Rashi is actually taking that Gemara and applying it to this to the Parsha. And he's saying that the four things mentioned there that you bench Gomel for are the four things that you would bring a carbon taida for, which actually the pasuk in Tehillim that it's all based on mentions v'yis b'chuziv chay taida, and they shall bring thanksgiving offerings. Which should mean, according to Rashi, that number one, and this is brought down by other sources, is that berachas ha-gomel, benching Gomel that we do, is in place of a carbon taida. When we had the Beis HaMikdash and we had karbanis, a person experiencing any of these four things will bring a Thanksgiving offering. Now that we don't have a Thanksgiving offering, what did our sages replace it with? They replace it with the bracha of Hagomel. And just as by the Gemara, just by benching Gomel, the Gemara says you have to bench Gomel for these four situations, Rashi says the same thing applies to a carbon taida, which would seemingly imply that, according to what Rashi is saying, a carbon taida actually could be an obligatory carbon. Meaning the same way you're supposed to be, you're obligated to bench Goymo for these situations, you're obligated to bring a carbon tiger for these four situations. And it's interesting to note that I saw that there are commentaries that point out in the Rambam, that the Rambam in his code of laws brings down that a person has to make the brach of HaGoymo for these four situations that we mentioned, but when he talks about carbon tiger, he makes no mention of it. Which would mean that according to the Rambam, or at least the way they're trying to deduce from the Rambam would be saying that a carbon taida is never mandatory. It's always voluntary. You would voluntarily maybe want to bring a carbon for any of these four things, but it's not mandatory. From the way that Rashi uses the Gemara here, and actually the Rashbam, the commentary of Rashbam, says it more explicitly, it is an obligation. That's what you're supposed to bring a carbon taida when you get through these four situations. So because of the fact that the parasha talks about carbon taida and berachas hagomel, as Rashi is saying, relates to carbon taida, it's in place of carbon taida. So I'd like to speak to you tonight about berachas hagomel, about benching gomel, some interesting things about it. Now, the first question that we can pose is that the Gemara says, and as Rashi brings down, there are four situations for which you bench Goymo. You traveled through the you went through the ocean, through the sea. You went through a desert. You became healed from a sickness, and you got out of jail. Okay. Are those the only four things you bench Goymo for? I mean, most people you'll see bench Goymo anytime they've made it out of some kind of a dangerous situation.
Okay,
but how about for other things? Let's say you go ahead and you were traveling in a forest and bandits came and they attacked you and they tried to get you and you escaped, or a wild animal attacked you and you escaped, you survived something like that, do you bench Gremel then? Let me ask you a different question. Let's say you traveled over the ocean, okay, and it was, as we say, smooth sailing. No problems whatsoever. The sky was blue, the waters were calm, you had a wonderful trip.
On a cruise ship,
you had a wonderful trip. Okay? Do you have to bench HaGoymo then? So, interesting, there is an opinion that says that if you traveled by sea, right, even though the Gemara says that's one of the four things that you have to go ahead and bench HaGoymo for, if nothing happened, if everything was fine, you wouldn't bench Goymo. But that's not what we paskin like. We don't paskin like that. We paskin that, again, benching Goymo is for surviving a dangerous situation. That opinion said it's only if you actually face a dangerous situation. But we paskin like the opinions that say that these four things that we mentioned are all considered dangerous situations. The potential for danger there is greater than in other places. And therefore, the fact that you made it through without any problems is a reason to give thanks to Hashem. The halacha also is, or the practice definitely is that for surviving other dangerous situations other than these four things, you also bench Goymo. But the difference is that any of these other, if you're experiencing something other than these four things, you have to actually face the danger. Okay? If I walk through the forest and nothing happened, you're not going to bench Goymo. But if I travel by sea and nothing happened, I still will bench Goymo. These four situations are considered dangerous situations that you have to bench Goymo for even if nothing happened. For other things, if you actually face another type of danger, you bench Goymo for that. So therefore, practically speaking, we will bench Goymo in any of these four situations even if nothing happened. We also bench Goymo if we did have a dangerous encounter, even if it's not one of these four things. Now, traveling by airplane is a very interesting discussion in general, because is traveling by airplane nowadays dangerous? No, I mean, let's not talk about what happened today, but again, you know, do we consider air flight dangerous? Okay, you can have an argument about that. You know, most of the time, people of Baruch Hashem make it. Okay, you may be traveling over the ocean, but you're not traveling through the ocean. So it's not exactly the same way that the Gemara talks about. So therefore, there's different opinions about benching Gaimo after flying. Rav Moshe Feinstein held that any time you fly in an airplane, you should bench Gaimo. Our custom is, the general custom is to bench Gaimo if you flew over the ocean. But if you fly domestically and you didn't fly any kind of ocean, people don't make Gaimo. That's a custom that people have. But I'm just saying, just once you mention the airplane thing, there are different opinions, practically speaking, about traveling by airplane.
And what
about
sickness? If you have a cold?
Yeah, that's also a discussion. What are we talking about here? Dangerous illness, any illness? Okay, typically, again, you got a cold, most people don't bench Gaimo after a cold. It has to be some kind of a serious, a life-threatening situation. Okay. And operations are always considered life-threatening situations. I don't know if, outpatient things are, but even our routine situations, if they're putting you out, it's considered, you've gone through a dangerous situation. Now, the wording of the bracha, when we bench Gaimo, we say, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Ha'olam, Hagoimel L'chayevim Tavois, Shagmalani Kol Tov. Literally means Hagomel, who grants Lachayavim to those who are guilty Tovis, goodness, Shagmalani Kol Tov, for he has granted me so much of this good. So when you make the bracha about Gaimel, you talk about how Hashem grants goodness to those who are guilty, and that's the goodness that I've experienced personally right now. Who's guilty here? Who did somebody do something wrong?
Well, the jail part, maybe.
Well, maybe yeah, maybe not. Okay? Maybe yeah, maybe not. How about if he was sick?
Yeah.
Okay? So, therefore, there is a discussion amongst the Paiskim, what exactly is the meaning of this L'chayavim? Who are the guilty ones we're talking about here? So, we have to kind of work through, we have to go step by step through this. So let's go through the four cases. Let's go through the four examples, okay? You became ill. Okay? You became ill. You were taken prisoner. Let's not talk about you did something wrong. You were taken prisoner, which can very often happen. Or at least in one time in the bar, very often happen, right? So there, you did not do anything to put yourself in this situation. However, anytime something difficult happens to us, it's meant to be a signal from Hashem that we need to look into ourselves and do tshuva. Anytime something goes wrong, it's a time for introspection. So if something happens to me and I become ill, very ill, and I survive it, or I was taken captive and thrown into jail, these are things where we say Hashem is sending us a signal. It's time to think about, why did Hashem do this to me? And when we do suffer these kinds of things, we have to say to ourselves, what's Hashem trying to tell me? And if I have been suffering, that must mean that I have done something wrong. And therefore, because I'm guilty, what happened to me, I'm guilty. I deserve what happened to me. And still, Hashem had the kindness of saving me. That's what I'm giving thanks for. And of course, hopefully I'm doing tshuva. Okay? Let's go through now with the other cases. You traveled by sea, okay? You traveled through the desert. I mean, you did that. You did it, right? So if you did it, so where is the guilt now? You shouldn't have taken the trip. But again, okay, you went through a dangerous, you've gone through this dangerous situation. Now again, if something may have happened there while you were in the desert, okay, or while you were traveling in the sea, there was a big storm and you were in danger, or there were these wild animals in the desert that were trying to attack you. So again, the fact that you were put in a dangerous situation, again, is a sign from Hashem that says, you got to think about, why did I give you this scare? Why did I put you in this situation? But if, let's say, the situation again is where, like we said, you traveled in the desert, traveled by sea, everything went fine and dandy. Okay? So why would I still refer to myself as chayavim, as guilty?
Maybe because you put yourself which we're not supposed to do.
I did it for business. Let's not talk about mountain climbing. I have to travel by sea because I have to do business. Still got a bench, Gaimo.
No, we're going to mention Shemo. Maybe you say I should do a business where I don't have to put myself in a dangerous situation.
Maybe, but again, I have to travel by sea. I have to travel by sea. It's my business. I shouldn't travel by sea. I should pick a different business.
Right.
Well, I don't know if that's so simple to say. You know, that's so simple. Listen, Zebulun, right? The tribe of Zebulun, they were seafarers. I mean, that was their bracha. That was their bracha.
Your doctor told you to do a colonoscopy, and this is you put you out, and this is
yeah.
So
I don't know if colonoscopy would be something you meant shkemo for, but you know, yeah, but I mean to say, I think with the you know, I think more like anesthesia and cutting and stuff like that. Okay, we could. That's a separate discussion. But I think the answer would be that we do find a concept that the satan is makatrig b'makom sakana. When you're in a place of danger, the satan, the accusing angel, that's when he starts prosecuting. Yaakov didn't want to let Binyamin go with the brothers. Why? Because, as Rashi brings down, they were traveling through a desert, it's a dangerous situation, and b'makom sakana, in a place of danger, situation of danger becomes a time of judgment, and the satan starts saying, who is this person to be able to get through this dangerous situation? And therefore, because none of us have a clean slate, when we do go through a dangerous situation, even if it was something that we needed to do, but again, we're in a dangerous situation, it's a situation when we're judged, and the satan is prosecuting, and the satan is making his complaints against us, there's a judgment against us, it's a situation where retribution could happen more than in other situations, and I still made it through. So therefore, we still go ahead whenever when we're making the Berachas HaGaima, whatever the situation may be, we still look at ourselves as chayavim, as guilty, either because we're guilty in the sense of thinking about why did Hashem bring this problem upon us, and even if things went fine, look, to survive a dangerous situation means you have to have schlusim, you have to have merits. And we know that we have demerits on our record. And the fact that still we make it through is a reason to give thanks to Hashem.
We overuse it often?
Excuse me?
Overuse it, I mean, everybody can have the term of what's dangerous and so forth, so...
No, typically danger is going to be, like, first of all, these four things, the Gemara tells us, this is considered dangerous situations. And there are other situations that again, we probably have to judge based on general things.
Going over the sea?
Traveling through the sea.
Traveling through the sea.
You got on a boat and you went into the water. Traveling over the sea, that's the question that revolves around an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, let me relate to you a incident or a situation, and let's see if we can discuss together. You know, if we can, let's say, point out some of the questions about what occurred. Because there was a halachic discussion about it. There was a rabbi in a certain city in Italy who had to make a trip by sea. And again, we're talking about a few hundred years ago. He had to make a long trip by sea. He came back to his hometown at night. And they made a big gathering in the shul welcoming back the Rav. They were very happy to see him back safe and sound. And it was at night in the shul. And the Rav got up in the shul in front of everyone. And he said the bracha of HaGoymo. He benched Goymo in front of everyone. So there was another scholar there who was not pleased with what he saw. Okay? So now, you're that scholar. What question would you ask on what this scholar did, on what the rabbi of the shul did?
Is it because it's public?
Well, every time you bench Gaimel, it's public, right? Okay. So here's the thing. Our practice is that when do we bench Gaimel typically? We get an aliyah, or when the Torah is out, if you get an aliyah or something, and even if not, you walk up to the Torah, and by the Torah you say, you bench Gaimel. You don't have, that's not an obligation. That's the practice. That's the custom, okay? That's not the obligation of what you have to do. And a Goymo is supposed to be said in front of a minion. It could be that you don't need a minion, but it's usually, but we say it in front of a minion.
But when you have the Torah, you definitely have a minion.
Yeah, but you can have a minion without the Torah too. Right? You get 10 people together and you have a minion.
Right.
So maybe that, you know, our practice has become to bench by Kriyas HaTorah, mm-hmm. but one of the things that the rabbi did is, why you bench a Goymo now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you should be doing it when you regularly do it. Then he had another question. He had a problem with the fact that he did it at night. Can you think of why?
Well, the korbanos were all during the day.
If we're saying that bench in Goymel is the place of carbon taida, you never offer a carbon at night. So then what is he benching Goymel at night for? If the Goymel is in place of a carbon taida, so then it should follow, you know, it should follow the laws of a carbon taida. So this was the difference of opinion between these scholars. And this case was put before the Chassam Sefer and asked him, what did he think? So the first thing he said was, it may be true that benching Goymel is in place of a carbon taida, but it's not a carbon taida. Right? Karbanos aren't at night. We make blessings at night all the time. So just so it may very well be that it, because we don't have a carbon taida anymore, therefore instead we bench Goymel. But it doesn't mean that every law of a carbon taida has to apply to benching Goymel. That was the first thing. Regarding whether it was the right time to do it, the right situation to do it, the Chassam Sefer said, I would have done the same thing. But I would have explained myself.
Would you do it a second time when it's over?
No, no, only once. No, only once. And he said, I would have done it, I think, meaning he felt that this situation where everybody was there and joyous that the rabbi made it back safe and sound, there was definitely an appropriate time to bench Goymel, but he would have said, I would have explained that why I'm doing it differently otherwise, so that it doesn't in any way disrupt the minig, the practice of saying it by the reading of the Torah. That's an interesting situation. Now, this next point, this last point about a Goymel that I'm going to make, but it's completely academic, okay? It has no, well, it's at least the way the question is posed. Maybe it could have some kind of ramifications, okay? But there was a question, a discussion. The Chidah brings down the following question. So Avraham took Yitzchak up onto the Akedah. He tied him on the Mizbeach. He was about to slaughter him. The Malach came and stopped. Okay, Yitzchak was clearly in a dangerous situation, and he made it out. So we know, it's the Gemara says that Avram kept even what would eventually be rabbinic laws. Did Yitzchak bench Goymel after he made it through the Akedah?
Cool.
Now, another case. We know there are cases of, there was the story of Daniel thrown into a lion's den.
What the answer? What? Yitzchak.
It doesn't say anywhere that he did.
Right,
so we're trying to figure out, did he have to?
Okay.
Did
okay.
You say bench after he got out of jail?
No. You can say that question too. Good question.
Yeah.
But that question already, you could say that maybe he did, because that's a clear case of getting out of jail. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's an interesting point. But there you could say clearly that he did. Let's wait and see the cases here, okay? Then you have a case of Daniel, right? Made it out of the lion's den. Hanani, Mishael, Azariah. They made it out of a burning furnace, just like Abraham did. Okay? Were those situations that that these people should have benched Goymel? Now, what's the question? So the question is that in all these situations, basically these people were doing what Hashem wanted them to do, right? Yitzchak was, Hashem wanted Yitzchak for a carbon, right? Yitzchak was giving up his life because Hashem told him, give up his life. Hanani, Mishael, Azariah, Daniel, they were all giving up their lives, Al-Kiddush Hashem, to sanctify Hashem's name. So this is not like you're finding yourself in a situation of danger, right? These are situations where these people were supposed to give up their lives. And therefore, perhaps an argument be made that you don't go ahead and make a bracha, thank you Hashem for saving me. This situation of danger was one I was supposed to be in. It's a mitzvah for me to be in. Not only that, if let's say in any of these situations, in any situation, a person dies al Kiddush Hashem. So we have a tradition, they make it to the highest level of Gan Eden. They're at the highest point. So if you would have died, you would have made it to the highest level of Gan Eden. So there's one argument to say that maybe this is not the appropriate situation, this way I understand it, that it's not the appropriate situation to bench Goymel, because basically it was a mitzvah for you to be in this situation of danger. You're supposed to put yourself there. It's a mitzvah to be there.
I have one more example for you.
Yeah.
Jonah.
Yeah, good. Good. But again, Jonah found himself in a situation. Excuse me?
He was in the water.
Yeah, but he wasn't in the water because Hashem put him in the water. He was in the water because...
No, but he was on the boat.
Yeah. No, he was running...
Yeah, but is your question then, should go off for after for the sea trip or for getting out of the fish?
Well, both.
But that's... So I'm saying, that's the question.
Right.
Traveling by sea, that's one thing, right? But he also... I mean, the truth is, you're right, either way, he made it through the sea, so, you know, he probably has to bench Gamel anyway, whichever you want to look at it. So again... All these situations, these people weren't supposed to be in their dangerous situation. It was a mitzvah for them to be there. And therefore there are those who said that no, that would not be a situation for them to bench Gremel. You know, so I don't know, according to these people, right, what would be if a situation where, you know, you're in, through history, Jews have been put up to a situation to abandon Yiddishkeit or give up their lives. And they're ready to give up their lives, and there they are, they're up there on the Ard Fay, and somehow or another, they got schlepped up. Right? I mean, they were supposed to do this. They were supposed to. Okay, maybe again, it came out because they were being forced into it. They'd bench Gremel, right? You know, to think about if it's the same kind of situation. Maybe not, because again, they were put in that situation. But others held, right, others held that in the case of Yitzchak, in the case of Chamesh of Azariah, he said, well, we find in Midrashim, in the Gemara, that there was loads of Shira. There were many songs of thanks to Hashem, of praise to Hashem that were sung. when Chamesh of Azariah made it out, when I think they maybe even says the Malachim saying Shira, when Yitzchak survived. I don't remember the exact sources that they're bringing. So the thing is that he says, well, you see that thanks was given to Hashem for it. Which the way I understand it is that again, yes, I was supposed to put myself in that situation. Not only was I supposed to, I did. You know, I did it. Chamesh of Azariah went into the fire. Daniel went into the lines. I mean, they went where they had to go. And they actually did it. Now Hashem did a miracle for them. Okay, so now we got both. I did what I was supposed to do, and I was so saved, so I could still bench Gremel. But again, an interesting academic question about these kinds of situations. A person who was supposed to give up his life on Kiddush Hashem, and Hashem had saved him from that situation miraculously, would he be benching Gremel or not? Okay, do you want to ask a question?
Yeah, just using such example. You were a rabbi, and somebody told you that across the desert there's a big person that you need to visit him. Well, you go and visit him, you're supposed to do it,
it's a visit to the sick. Yeah, but the thing is that first of all, maybe, you know, maybe I don't have to put myself in danger to do that. You know, that's number one. Number two, still, if Hashem puts me in a situation that I have to be in, I have to put myself in a situation to do something, so again, I'm still in a dangerous situation.
Yeah, I think I agree.
And therefore, I still have to bench Gremel. Here the point was is that they were actually, here the bigger question is the fact that, so what are you trying to ask based on what we're talking about now with Chamesh of Azariah because they gave up their lives, like giving up the lives of Kiddush Hashem?
Yes.
You can't say it's a mitzvah for me to put myself in danger in your case. I have a mitzvah of let's say to help this person, right? And now, okay, so the circumstances are that I have to put myself in danger.
Right,
but it's not like directly my mitzvah is to give up my life. It's a little bit different.
Can you
okay.
Do it also?
Never supposed to put yourself in danger. Oh, so you mean that part? I mean, that's because they have a psak that says that for a lot of situations you should be benching Gaimo.
Yeah.
That's the psak that they follow. Okay. One more thought just about the Karban Taida, and that is that, as we mentioned, the Karban Taida is different than other Shlamim, in the sense that every other Shlamim you get, all other Shlamim Karbanis, you get 2 days and a night to eat the Karban. The Karban Taida is a day and a night, and that's it. Your time is shortened. So the commentary of the Abarbanel explains the reason for this aspect, for this halacha of Karban Taida in the following way. We have a pasuk we say in Tehillim, Locha ezbach zevach toida, to you I will offer a thanksgiving offering, uveshem Hashem ekra, and the name of Hashem I will call. What that means is that when you bring a Thanksgiving offering, you're supposed to call out, which means you're supposed to publicize. You don't just keep it. You're supposed to publicize this Yeshua, this salvation that Hashem brought for you. Therefore, says Dabar Abinel, being that there is this aspect of giving thanks to Hashem for being saved, that you should do it in public. Therefore, the Torah said by Karban Torah, you only get a day and a night to eat it. You have less time to eat it. You have less time to eat it, you need help. You need more help than usual. Mm-hmm. So you're going to go ahead and have more people celebrating, more people participating in this celebration of your salvation. It'll publicize it more. The Torah create a situation where you should have where you'll be publicizing more what happened to you, because you've got to have more people there because you got a short amount of time to eat the carbon. Okay, let's now turn back and let's go back to the beginning of the parasha. And this is page 568, Perek Vav, Pasuk Aleph. Vayedavar Hashem Moshe Lemar, Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, Tzavas Aaron Vespan of Lemar, Zeis Terasa Oila. Command Aaron and his son, saying, this is the law of the burnt offering. So Rashi comments on the word Tzav. Rashi said Tzav means, when we use the word Tzav to mean command, we mean actually to urge. The Kohanim need to be urged when it comes to performing the Ola. And Rashi brings down from a Medrash that Reb Shimon said, "B'yaseh tzarech hakosav lazaris." The Torah really needs to urge on something, a mitzvah, but makom sheish bechasar and kiss, when it's a situation where there's involved a loss of money. Meaning when performing a mitzvah involves a loss of money, that's where the Torah, that's where Hashem tells Moshe tzav. Don't just tell them the mitzvah. Urge them on. Encourage them. Urge them. Rally them that they should do this mitzvah, because there's chasar and kiss, there's loss involved. So the commentary of the Sifta Kamen points out, this is Aaron talking, what we're going to find next in the rest of the parsha about the discussion of the Ola is about what to tell the Kohanim. Tzavas Aaron Vesbanav. We're talking to the Kohanim, we're not talking about to the person bringing the carbon oila. We're talking about to the Kohanim, what they have to do with the carbon oila. They're not losing anything. They're not losing any money. So what does Rashi mean? That this is an example where you need to urge them because of the loss of money. They're not losing any money. So the Sifta Kamen explains that Rashi doesn't mean literally loss of money, but Rashi means no gain. In the carbon oila, the only thing that remains is the skin, which goes to the Kohen who offered the Ola. It's not like it gets divided up amongst all the Kohanim. And therefore, when the Kohanim are involved in the carbon Ola, there's really not much that they gain from it, that they get from it. And therefore, it's in this situation where Hashem tells Moshe, Tzav, urge. You've got to urge them. You've got to rally them to do the mitzvah, because they really have no gain here. Now, that kind of sounds a bit selfish, but at the same time, it's dealing with reality. Reality is that when we have no gain, we're just not as excited about it.
What's the gain?
That would be enough. That's what we need. That's what the urging needs to tell us about how much we gain spiritually. But in essence, when there's no material of sorts, some kind of material gain, we're just not as enthusiastic about it, and that even applies to the Kohanim. It's a reality. It's human nature, and therefore, when there is no gain over here by the carbon oila, Moshe is told tzav. Hashem tells Moshe tzav. You got to urge the Kohanim. And my friend points out that really this is a classic example that all fundraisers need to know, and that is that when you raise money for a building, it's a lot easier to raise the money to build the building than to keep up the building, than to maintain the building. Mm-hmm. Because people like, not so you'll say, wow, because people like the name, which it's true. But it's also like, you want to see your investment last, right? You want to see your investment last, right? If I go ahead and I give money towards the building, right, I gave him X amount of money, and now there's this big building that's here.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take it to a smaller level, right, you're going to spend a lot of money on an esrog. Okay, you spent a lot of money on an esrog, but I have an esrog. For a week, but I have an esrog. For a week, but I have something. The carbonyla? Nothing. Nothing.
Wait,
it's almost as bad. It's almost as bad as helping the yeshiva pay bills.
Uh-huh.
Right? You give them the money, it's gone.
But it did some
purpose. But the point is that it, but this is all the example of what we're talking about here. When there is no apparent lasting effect of for what we invest the money in, we're not as enthusiastic about it. And therefore, here Hashem tells Moshe to tell to Tzavas Aaron, command, urge, rally him. Everybody needs to be urged and to be strengthened in doing a mitzvah when they don't see some kind of lasting material effect in what they've done. Let's now turn to Pasuk Yud Ches, page 572. Pasuk Yud Zayin, 2 lines from the top. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe leimar. Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Daber al Aaron vel banav leimar. Speak to Aaron and to his son saying, Zois teras hachatas. This is the law of the sin offering. The mekayma shetishachet ha'ayla. In the place that the burnt offering is slaughtered, tishachet hachatas lefnei Hashem. The sin offering should be slaughtered before God. Kodesh kodeshim hi. It is holy of holies. So the pasuk states that where you shecht an ola carbon, that is where you shecht the sin offering. Different carbonas have different areas. Some in the north, some in wherever it may be. There are different areas where you're supposed to, in the courtyard, slaughter the carbon. So the Torah says, where do you slaughter the sin offering? Where you slaughter the ola offering. And the Gemara says that what the reason for this, Gemara and Sefer, the reason for this is basically to protect the dignity of the sinner. You bring a chatas, why? Because he brought a sin. Because he performed a sin. That's why you bring a sin offering. Now, if the sin offering was now, it had its own designated area where it's slaughtered, okay? So people would walk by and say, oh, that guy did it on there. He did something wrong. But now, if the sin offering is offered in the same place as the burnt offering, then you don't know why he's bringing the carbon. Now the Gemara says that's not so simple. That's not so simple for many practical reasons. Let me just read to you this Gemara. Gemara Saita Lamedbeis Amedbeis. Okay. Actually, the Gemara starts off saying that the reason why we daven Shemoneh Esrei silently, the practice is based on Chana. But the reason why the halacha is to daven that way is so as not to embarrass those who've committed sins. There are people who in their davening say a vidui, even if it's not Yom Kippur, they confess for their sins. And therefore, so they shouldn't be embarrassed to do so, therefore you're supposed to do the Shemoneh Esrei quietly. And this idea of not embarrassing sinners is what we see, that the Torah did not differentiate between the sin offering and the burnt offering, meaning they're both slaughtered in the same place, so as not to embarrass the person bringing the sin offering. But the Gemara says, that's not so simple. I mean, there are certain karbanos, the Mizbeach, the altar had a line that went around it. And the blood of certain karbanos were sprinkled above the line, some below the line. So the Gemara asks, the burnt offering blood is on the upper half of the Mizbeach. And the blood of the sin offering is on the upper half. The Ola, the burnt offering, is on the lower half. So everybody sees. Dr. Gemara, no. Hasam Kain Hu Biyadat. No, the only one who knows is the Kain. He knows. Excuse me?
He's the same animal.
Well, one second. Okay? The Kain is the one who knows. Not anybody goes looking and sees, where they're slaughtering the blood. It's the Kohen. The Kohen. Okay. Now, the Gemara then asks, V'yika chatas nekeva oiva zachar. Wait a minute. A sin offering could be a female. An ola is a male. Just look at the animal, you'll see. So the Gemara says, Hasa machasya ba'alya. You could actually cover up the place where you see it's a female with the tail of the animal. So again, you can still cover it up.
Of course.
Back to Gemara, teinach kafsa. That's good if you have a lamb. Seira, but if it's a female goat, what are you going to do? They don't have a, the female goats don't have a tail. So the Gemara says, no, you know why? I'll tell you why. Hasan iu de kamichset nafshe. You might as well see a kafsa. Come I see seira. Who told you to bring a female goat? You could bring a female lamb. Meaning the chatas is a female. But you have a choice. It could be a female lamb. It could be female lamb. It could be a female goat, right? So who? What do you, if you're not, if you want to protect your dignity, right? Bring the animal with which you'll protect your dignity with. But then the Gemara says, but there's one type of sin offering that you don't have a choice. For avodas kachavim, for idol worship, okay, you got to bring a seira. You got to bring a female goat. That's what you have to bring. You don't have a choice. So in that situation, it's going to be clear that the person is bringing it for a sin. So the Gemara says, for the sin of Avodah Zarah, it'll be you. That embarrassment will be part of your kapara, part of your atonement.
How can you do it?
Okay, now, I just want to conclude now with a story that relates to this. It's not exactly the same thing, but it relates to it. Clearly, the Gemara is teaching us there's an idea of protecting the dignity of a sinner. He's a sinner, he's got to bring a carbon, but his dignity is not open game. Even that, even such a person, you have to respect it. There's no allowance for it to embarrass him for his sin. He did his sin, he's doing tshuva, he's bringing his animal, and that's enough. Just because he sinned doesn't mean that he has to be embarrassed for his sin. So this past Shabbos was the art site of my Rosh Yeshiva of El Yisrei, the Yeshiva of Philadelphia. And I found a magazine that had a write-up on him when he passed away 6 years ago. It's very interesting reading an article about your Rebbe when it's like a stranger is writing it and you're like trying to see like how he writes about it. But there are some things about Revelia's life. He was known as Revelia. About his life that I wasn't that aware of. And they bring a story like this, which again, it relates to the situation. In a community, they call it an out-of-town community, there was a mechanech, a person involved in Jewish education, who had behaved inappropriately.
What?
Behaved inappropriately. Exactly what he did. He behaved inappropriately. And the... So the school called up Rebel Yisrei about, you know, what do we do about him? So Rebellia was felt that he has to be dismissed for what he did. But he said, don't fire him yet. Give it a few more weeks. And the point was, giving it a few more weeks was actually allowing this same educator to make some other kind of mistake, to do something else wrong, something not as serious, and when he does that mistake, then you'll fire him. Now let's assume, I'm going to assume for this story, right, that leaving this educator around didn't pose any further danger. Okay, he had to be removed for what he did. But, you know, leaving around for 3 more months wouldn't necessarily pose any danger to anyone, okay? But at the end of the day, basically, it comes out that it was Rebellia who said, and I can know, at the end of the day, it was when the school would fire him, right? They would say, based on whose decision, you know, you're firing a teacher, you're firing him from his job, right? They were going to say that it was Rebellia's decision. But he still had decided that instead of throwing him out then when he did it, that we're going to wait, we're going to find some other excuse to get rid of him, and when that excuse happens, we're going to get rid of him, even though people are going to wonder and going to say, that's what you fired him for? That's what you fired him for? But as the article says, the reason why he did this was to protect the dignity of the family. It was to protect the dignity of this man's family. What this man did probably wasn't a secret. But if he gets fired for that, then his family goes through terrible embarrassment. If he gets fired for some trivial thing, the people, like, you know, say, what did he get fired for that for? So that the family doesn't suffer as much. And therefore, instead of embarrassing the family, a decision was made that would make Svei look a lot worse by having him fired for such a trivial thing. But the reason why he did it was to protect the family. And sometimes we have situations where, I mean, the Gemara is telling us that we have to protect the dignity of a sinner. Okay, there are times where a sinner has to be removed. But still, we have to try to remember there's people dignities here. There's the dignity of a family that also has to be protected.
And what if you didn't do anything wrong enough to find something again? But going back